would have been somewhere near the end of chapter 3 in Malachim Bet. That's where we were. And what was happening in chapter 3 is the following: a coalition of forces joined together in order to go to war against Moab. Moab had been under the heel of Yisrael, and then there was rebellion. The fact is that the rebellion was of such a nature that not only Yisrael suffered, but Yehuda as well suffered. There have been archaeological finds from many years ago where they found Meshar, the king of Moab, the one who is discussed in this chapter, the one who rebelled against Yisrael, describes his attacks against Reuven and Gad, who are on the other side, the east side of the Jordan. They destroyed cities, towns, and villages, put thousands of Jews to death. We're talking about a tragic, terrible period in Jewish history. It is Yehoram, the son of Ahav, who takes the initiative, and he calls upon Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, that they should all go out to battle against Moab. Who joins them in battle? One of the vassal states that is, in a sense, an ally of Yisrael and Yehuda, is Edom. How do they go about the battle? Moab is on the other side of the Jordan. So there are a number of ways of attacking. You can just cross the Jordan and a frontal attack against Moab. One can cross the Jordan and come at a point higher, further up north, come down and attack Moab from the north. There is a third possibility, that is going through the south. South means crossing someplace by the Dead Sea or by Aqaba and Eilat, coming up along the desert and attacking from the south. The choice was to attack from the south, and most probably the logistics of attack from the south were because, huh? Excellent. Surprise, I am surprised. I'm surprised, because, women don't have to be, militarily, just take it easy, don't get yourselves. Surprise. Most probably the surprise is, first of all, because nobody else ever attacked from the south, and number two, because nobody else ever attacked from the south, their defenses on the south were a great deal sparser. And here three armies make their way to the south of Moab, and they're preparing to attack. And either they had made a terrible miscalculation, or they had calculated correctly, but events were such that they expected that there would be a number of places where they can get water. There most probably were scouts who knew of certain watering holes, and here they're schlepping, wandering through the desert for 7 days, three armies, no water. There is a shita I once saw that says that in a sense what they wanted to do was retrace the steps of Klal Yisrael as they came out of Mitzrayim. Klal Yisrael coming out of Mitzrayim, went around Edom, came up toward Moab, and what is it? It was Balak, king of Moab, you understand? The confrontation that never took place, and now it's going to take place. In a sense, retracing, walking in the footsteps of their ancestors. So, all right, so now we know that there's I'm only reviewing what we learned last week in order to get to the point where we were up to. So here it is, they're without water. Yehoshaphat is the one who says, is there no prophet here? And yes, somebody says that of all things, there is a prophet here, Elisha ben Shaphat, the one Asher Yotzak, the one who had poured water upon the hands of Elio. I want you to remember the word Yotzak. Let me take you to where we are. Mm. I don't want a guest to think that there's any kind of discrimination. Oh, no, she's from Ottawa.
Yeah.
Now, is that's your husband back there? All right. No. We explained last week. That's Pasuk Yud Aleph in Perek Gimel. Po Elisha ben Shofat Hashiyotzak Mayim Al Yedei Elio. There are two meanings. Number one, and this the fact is Hashiyotzak Mayim Al Yedei Elio. When Elio had to pour water on the Mizbeach, on Har HaKarmel, on Mount Carmel, it was Elisha who poured the water for Elio. But the Gemara takes us one step further. I don't think we mentioned it last week. The Gemara in Bracha says, Asher lomad lo ne'mar. It doesn't say that Elisha learned from Elio. What does it say? Asher yotzak mayim, that he poured water. In a sense, what it represents is the idea similar to the idea of the Levi who pours water on the hands of the Kohen, and Eliyahu, according to Chazal, that Eliyahu was Pinchas, so Eliyahu is indeed a Kohen. But the term Yotzak Mayim, to pour hands upon, water upon one's hands, is similar to the idea of sitting at the feet of, drinking into the waters of, being the great student of the great teacher. But the Gemara says the following: Asher lomad lo nemar. It doesn't say that Elisha ben Shofat learned from Elio. It says that he poured water on the hands of Elio. From which we learn, Gadol shimusha yoter melimuda. Greater is the one who serves the Talmud Chacham, the Gadol b'Yisrael, more than the one who learns from him. In other words, that because when you learn Torah from Eliyahu, this is an intellectual exercise. But when you serve him, you learn to become the neshama of Eliyahu, the characteristics, the personality of Eliyahu. And that's why from here the Gemara makes this great statement, Gadol shimusha yoter melimuda. Serving a great man is even more than the study from him. But I said, watch, remember the word yotzak. The word Yotzak is going to appear often with regard to Elisha. And we began to express the idea last week. Eliyahu is represented, what represents Eliyahu? Eliyahu is fire. Elisha, the Talmud, is water. Eliyahu was taken heavenward in a chariot of fire. Eliyahu is the one who brings down fire from heaven upon the altar. The one who pours water, and the one who's going to be giving water here to three thirsty armies that are on the brink of death. And what else did we mention last week? What did we learn about in the chapter before? What was the first thing that was done by Elisha? Well, the first and the second that were done by Elisha. The first thing that Elisha does is he splits the waters of the Yarden. The second thing that he does is he comes to Yericho and the waters are bitter. Who is it that heals the waters? It is Elisha. Elisha's personality and his contribution is going to be defined in terms of water, while Eliyahu was fire. We will continue this as we come to different important points in the life of Elisha. All right, so that was Pasuk 11. Anyway, there is the confrontation between Yehoram, king of Yisrael, and Elisha, where Elisha tells him, what do I have to do with you? Why should I even talk to you? Why don't you go to the gods of your father, the deities? Go ask them to help you out in this tough situation. Yehoram turns to him and he says, listen, Klal Yisrael is in crisis. Three armies over here are in dire straits. Then, Pasuk 15, it said that Elisha asked for somebody to come play music for him, because God appears to a prophet only when he is in a state of joy, happiness. Because of his anger, he wasn't happy. So what has to happen now is that somebody plays for him. So let's begin from Pasuk 16. Vayomer, So he said, Karma Hashem, so says God, HaNachal Azeh gave him. This wadi is going to become full of holes, wells of water. Ki Karma Hashem. Because so says God, Lo Tiru Ruach. You're not going to see the wind. Velo Tiru Geshem. You're not going to see rain. The HaNachal Ahu Yimol Eimayim. And the river bed is going to become full of water. Ushtitem atemu miknechem ubehentechem. You and your cattle and your animals will drink. Vinokal zos bein Hashem. That's going to be light. That's going to be easy in the eyes of God. That's going to be simple. What He's going to do even more for you is vinatanat moav v'yedchem. He's going to give moav into your hands. Vehikitem. This is the pasuk we ended with last week. Vehikitem kol ir mivtzor, you shall destroy, smite every city that is fortified. Vehol ir mivchor, and every chosen city, all of their best cities, destroy them. Vehol eitz tov tapilu. Vehol eitz tov tapilu. Every good tree, you should fell. Bring down every good tree. Vehol mayine mayim tistom, when all of the wells of water, you should shut and close. V'chol ha'chelka ha'tova, and every good piece of land, tach'ivu ba'avonim. This is such a beautiful term. Tach'ivu means to pain, cause pain. You should cause pain to every good piece of land by filling it with stones. Do you understand what the Navi is? These are really the words of God. He is describing Mother Earth like something that has feelings, but it's an inanimate object. It's matter. But I believe what he's doing over here in this pasuk is he is balancing out the problem that really emerges from this pasuk. He says that all good trees are to be chopped down. Torah says very clearly in Parashat Shoftim, in Devarim, Ki totzur al ir, when you're going to besiege a city for many days, lo tashchit et eitzar, you're not permitted to destroy the fruit-bearing trees around that city. You're not allowed to. Osir. Fascinatingly, of course, the halacha applies to chopping down fruit-bearing trees all the time, under most circumstances. But the way the Torah gets the message home is to tell us that even under the exceptional circumstances of war, even in the midst of war, you have to be sensitive to the fact that a fruit-bearing tree has value and you can't cut it down for no good reason. The way? Excellent. She said, maybe this is Moab being repaid measure for measure by virtue of the fact that when Jews were going through the desert, Moab, Ammon and Moab were the ones who refused to give them bread and water. Which means because of their cruelty, then there is going to be cruelty. It'll take a few hundred years. But they're going to feel the punishment of that cruelty. Yeah.
If the Navi tells you to do something against the Torah, you can't believe.
Why? No, that's why I gave you. Now you know, you couldn't have asked a better question, Reba. This Mamshul thing, if we be the Hakamadi, Hakamishiyayans, we couldn't have set this up any better. She asked, but isn't it true that if a prophet tells you to do something which is in opposition to Torah, you don't have to listen to the prophet? And over here, the prophet is telling us, go cut down every good tree. I'm going to come to that in a moment. That's why I have the Rambams over here. But what I want to show you is the balance. When the Torah says that you're not allowed to cut down a fruit-bearing tree, you know what words the Torah uses? Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. Because man is a tree of the field. What does the pasuk mean when it says man is a tree of the field? Man lives from the tree of the field. And if man lives from it, then man has to has to respect it and show his gratitude. You don't cut it down. Which means already the Pasuk in Torah has made the connection between the inanimate object, the tree, and has described it in some form that because it gives life, it has life. So I'm saying that the Navi over here, in order to balance out the Chol Eitz Tov Tapilu, every good tree you shall fell, he uses the term Tachivu Vavonin, that when you're going to put rocks and stones over the field, you're going to cause it pain. Because we're looking at God's inanimate object, the field, the tree, we look at it as a living object. And therefore you're not permitted to destroy it. Here are the unusual circumstances that, of course, we're going to see in a moment. Why did they indeed listen to the words of the Navi? But there's more. The halacha of not cutting down a fruit-bearing tree is really only a general rule. In other words, it expresses a great deal more than the Torah says. All that the Torah says is not to chop down fruit-bearing trees. I mean, the fact is that George Washington shouldn't have done it. Chop down the cherry tree. What are you talking about? How can you chop down a cherry tree? You're not allowed to chop down a cherry tree. In this halacha, what's expressed is the greater halacha of Bal Tashchis. Lo tashchit et eitzah, you shall not destroy the trees. Here is the broader general halacha, you can't destroy anything of value. I'm sure that every child heard from their Yiddish imam, you understand, when they left over half a bowl of porridge, can't throw it out. Bal Tashchis, Bal Tashchis. We were raised on the guilt complex of Bal Tashchis, especially those of us who grew up during the Second World War. Yeah, that's right. Those of us who, a whole world is starving, and so we were raised on Bal Tashchis. But what's extremely important about the halacha of Bal Tashchis is, and every so often, one is going to read so-called scholarly articles. I remember even reading some of them in the old days when we lived yet in the old country in America, in the New York Times, scholarly articles that the destruction of the environment, man's callous attitude toward the environment, his inflicting harm on the ecological balance of the world, comes from the Jewish Bible, because man was given license to destroy. Because God says to Adam, Redu ba'aretz, have dominion over the world, v'kivshuha, and conquer her. So of course, Sonei Yisrael throughout time has said, this is Adam 007 given license to destroy, the natural resources of the world. Because obviously they assume that nobody is going to take a look later on in Sefer Devarim where the Torah establishes the halachic principle that you can't destroy anything of value. When you take the two psukim side by side, then it means therefore that yes, you have dominion over the world and you can conquer it but not destroy it. You may benefit from nature. And there is a beautiful, beautiful medrash. The beautiful medrash that says that after God created man, he took him by the hand. Lakcho biyado, he took him by the hand and he took him through Gan Eden and he told him, ten datcho shelo tekalkel, she'im tekalkel, mi yavo acharecho letaken. I believe that it's on the pasuk in Kohelet, where the pasuk says there are mu'uvat, there are mistakes or errors that people make that lo yuchal letkon, you can't correct it anymore. There are mistakes that simply can't be corrected. The mistake is done, the destruction is done, it's all over. So on this, the Medrash says that God took Adam HaRishon by the hand and he took him through the world and he told him, take a look at what a beautiful world I've given you. Make it your business not to destroy it, because if you destroy it, who will come afterwards and correct what you've done? The fact is, when you go through Torah, Tanakh, there are so many references to a sense of sanctity. that one has to feel in all of creation, because it's God's creation. It's just another one of the things, just like they accused us of poisoning the wells, they accused us of having given license to the world to destroy. On the contrary, the Chol Eitz Tov Tapilu over here, that you should cut down every fruit-bearing tree, every good tree, this is the exception. This is the exception. The general rule is, talking about, you have to be careful. By the way, which mitzvah of all? I would say a radical mitzvah, an extremely radical mitzvah, expresses the same idea. Should I give you a hint? Should I give you a hint? No, I don't want to give you a hint. I can't think of a hint. Let's say that it is a mitzvah that is unique to Eretz Yisrael. All right. Shemitah. Do you know what Shemitah means? An entire year, the agriculture of a country comes to a halt. By the way, not only the prohibition of working Shemitah is an indication of this mitzvah, that the earth doesn't belong to me. Lashem ha'aretz u'maloha. The earth and all that's in it belongs to God. If I destroy a fruit-bearing tree, it's not merely a crime against the ecology or the greens. It's a crime against God. It's God's world. But more than that, even the halacha of what's permitted in Shemitah, the Rambam writes it so beautifully. In Shemitah year, whatever is growing, you're supposed to water it. You're supposed to make sure, because God never intended that Eretz Yisrael should look like a desolate land during the course of Shemitah. Sure, yeah, you have to know how to take care of flowers and trees. Eretz Yisrael still has to look green. But you have to also know that the earth doesn't belong to you. In addition to the fact, of course, the earth needs a rest also. All of this is part of the greater idea of Hashem Ha'aretz U'maloha, and because the world belongs to God, therefore you cannot destroy it. And therefore no one can come in and accuse the Jewish people of giving the world license to destroy. Yes? Yeah, all right. All the fact is, all the mitzvot are tluyot baretz. Then there are a lot of... There are halachas in Choshen Mishpat. In ancient Israel, you were permitted to build factories only on certain sides of the city. There were parts of a city where you couldn't build a factory, because the natural winds would bring the smoke into the city. You have to be concerned about the environment. I had once said that with regard, Mishnah and Avos says that there were 10 miracles that happened in the Beis HaMikdash every day. One of the 10 miracles was that the smoke of the Mizbeach would always go in a straight line up. There could be hurricanes and tornadoes, but the smoke of the Mizbeach always went straight heavenward. Wherever you were in Yerushalayim, you'd look toward Har HaBayit and you'd see a straight column of smoke going up. What was the pshat in this nes? What was the meaning of the nes? God also doesn't want to pollute the air of Yerushalayim. The air of Yerushalayim has got to be clean. So now, Reva's question, here is a Navi who is telling the people to do something which is in opposition to a mitzvah in the Torah. So I want you to take a look in the Rambam, chapter 9. Chapter 9, in mine it's page Lamed Vav. Page Lamed Vav. Four lines from the bottom. You know, this is also, oh boy, just, you know, it's great coming here to learn with you. I just thought of something. You'll see right away. See right away. Just thought of something. It's great. V'chein im yom alonu anofi. You got it, four lines from the bottom. Also, the Rambam says if a prophet is going to tell us anofi shenod alonu shuhu anofi. What kind of a prophet are we talking about? One whom we already know to be a prophet. That means he has proven himself. He's a real He's a real prophet. If he's going to tell us, La'avor al-achat mikol mitzvot ha-murot ba-Torah, he's going to tell us to transgress one of the mitzvahs that are in Torah. All our mitzvahs are they. Or he's going to tell us to do many avedas. Bein kalot, bein chamurot. It makes no difference whether they are easy avedas, severe avedas. Lefi sha'a. Those are the two important words. If he tells you to be over the avera lefi sha'a, only for this moment in time, temporarily, mitzvah l'shmo'alo, it's a mitzvah to listen to him. Elsewhere, I don't think he says it here, but he says it in one of his other writings. The Rambam says the following: if a Navi is going to tell somebody or everybody to be Mechal Shabbos, this Shabbos you have to be Mechal Shabbos in order to do such and such. So you know what the great paradox is going to be? The one who will be Mechal Shabbos is going to fulfill a mitzvah. And what happens if you have a closet tzaddik over there that says, I know the Navi told me, if I used to drive my car, I can't, I never did it, I can't do it, I can't do it. The one who's not going to be Mechal Shabbos is Chayiv Misa because he was over al Divrei HaNavi, he transgressed the words of the Navi. What the Navi says, and if the Navi says it with Yishor, the Herman is going to explain, if a prophet is going to come and say that Mitzvah 523 doesn't apply anymore, then we know that he's a false prophet. The Navi only has the right to suspend a mitzvah or mitzvot of Torah temporarily for a particular moment in time. This is what we learned from our first wise men. We heard it from them. Bakol, in Yom Elokah HaNavi, Avor al Divrei Torah, in everything. If a prophet is going to tell you to be over, transgress the words of Torah like Eliyahu Bahara Carmel, Eliyahu at Mount Carmel, Shmalo, listen to him, Chutz, Me'aveh Dezorah. The only one thing that a Navi never has the right to say is worship Avodah Zarah, worship idols. That can't be. That's out of the question. But if he tells you to be over al Divrei Torah, like Eliyahu Bahara Carmel, and the Rambam is going to explain, what did Eliyahu say at Har HaCarmel? He said, we're going to bring a sacrifice. But the halacha is, once the Beit HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim, you have no right to bring a sacrifice any place outside of the Beit HaMikdash. He was doing an aveira, but he told them that this is the command of God. It's only if this is going to be for a temporary period of time. Like Eliyahu Mount Carmel, he brought an ola outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Yerushalayim nivchedet lekach. Yerushalayim had been chosen for that. And once Yerushalayim is chosen, you're not permitted to bring a sacrifice elsewhere. V'hamakriv b'chutz chayiv kares. And somebody who brings a korban outside of Yerushalayim, the punishment is kares. U'mipnei shehu navi, but because he is navi, mitzvah l'shmor alo, it's a mitzvah to listen to him. Do you know what I find fascinating? You know what I thought as a The two Nevi'im who told people to do Avedas were Eliyahu and Elisha. Elisha is his student. Like they say, an Edim is a Halbeshver. Is that what they say, huh? A son-in-law is half of his father-in-law. Elisha, most probably, is twice his Rebbe. Eliyahu Har HaCarmel, and it's Elisha be. Let me ask you. If somebody in Brooklyn is going to ask you a shaila, there's a fruit tree that grows in Brooklyn. Can I cut it down or not? What would you paskin? Does the halacha of not cutting down a fruit-bearing tree apply to the one fruit-bearing tree that grows in Brooklyn? No, the mitzvah applies. I'm going to take now the prerogative of a vav and a posek, and I'm going to tell you very clearly, the halacha applies all over and under all circumstances. If you would come and ask me a shaila, that's exactly what I would tell you. It can't destroy any tree or plant that has life in it. However, there is, if I'm telling you the halacha, I might as well tell you the halacha says the following. What happens if there is greater value in the tree down than in the tree up? For example, if I need to cut down a fruit-bearing tree so that I should build a high-rise apartment building that's going to be worth shvere billionim, so the halacha makes it very, very clear that it depends on, it's a matter of value, because then destroying it is not an act of destruction. It has to be, that's the word. The destruction has to be wanton destruction. Destruction without any qualifier, any place.
Perfect example now, Ramat Rachel just tore down almost all the fruit trees. They're going to build a home.
On each good piece of land, a person would throw his stone, umil'uha, and they filled the land with stones. B'chol mayon, mayon, mayim, yistomu, every well of water they closed, b'chol eitz tov yapilu, and every good tree they felled, ad hishir avoneho, b'kir charoshes, b'yosovu hakaloim b'yaku. Kir charoset was one of the main cities of Moab, and the only thing that was left standing over there was the wall of stone. B'yosovu hakaloim, you know what the kalaim are? You know what it was that David went against Goliath?
The slingshot.
But take a slingshot and magnify it 1,000 times over. What did they call them, those things? The catapults. Where they would throw, or, you know, missiles. They were called boulders or balustrades, ballistic missiles of an ancient kind. And they smashed the walls of Moab. Vayar melech Moab, the king of Moab, saw ki chozak mimenu ha-melchama, that the wall was stronger than him. He was losing. Vayikach otav 700 ish shalev cherev. He took 700 men with their swords out. Lahavkia el melech Edom. What he wanted to do was to break through the lines to the king of Edom. Why does he want to go after the king of Edom? The fact that Yisrael is waging war with him, they're enemies. Yeah? The fact that Yehuda is waging war with him, they're enemies. But Edom has joined the enemy. Edom has joined the enemy. He wanted to break through to get to the king of Moab, but Yehuda, they weren't able to. Vayikach et b'no ha-bechor. Unbelievable pasuk. Vayikach et b'no ha-bechor ashim loch tachtov. He took his firstborn son, who would rule after him, Vayalehu Ola al Hachoma, and he brought him as a sacrifice upon the wall. Vayehi Ketzav Gadol al Yisrael, there was great anger against Israel. Vayisu Me Olav, and Israel journeyed away from him. Vayoshufu La'aretz, they returned to the land. I like the confusion. What's your confusion? What's your problem, Sarah?
I don't know.
Oh, she's saying, who took who? Who took whose firstborn son? What were you people saying over there?
Moab,
that the king of Moab took his son and brought his son as a sacrifice on the Mizbeach. That's how the Gemara learns Pshat. Let me read the Gemara to you.
Why was Israel angry?
Oh, no, there was anger against Israel, and this I'm going to explain. The Gemara says the... There is a pasuk that appears two or three times in Yirmiyahu, where Yirmiyahu says in the name of God, Ashalo tziviti, I never commanded it, velo dibarti, I never said it, velo alta alibi, it never occurred to me. What is it that God never commanded? What is it that he never said? What is it that never occurred to him? And I think I think you'll see how the words of Yirmiyahu are so apt. Says the Gemara, Ashalot Siviti, God says, I never commanded. I never commanded La'avram sheyishchat et beno. I never commanded Avram to slaughter his son. Elo amartila, you know what I really told him? You know what the real message was? Al tishlach yadcha, don't send your hand against the boy. What I wanted to show and demonstrate for all time is that I reject human sacrifice. I reject human sacrifice. Boy, what a...
That's in the Gemara.
The Gemara!
Ram.
I have a chance to know that too. I want a chance to know that too. I'll find it. As soon as I find it, I think it's a Gemara in Tainus, but I'll hang it in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. You know, I mean, this is, of course, a pasuk to be learned on December 25th. I never, never wanted human sacrifice. Out of the question. Rejection. Avram, I never told Avram, I never commanded Avram that he should slaughter his son. I told him, Atishlach yotcha, lehodia lechol ha'umat, to let all of the nations know, chibosa shel Avram, God's love for Avram, or Avram's love for God, shelo chosach es yechido mimenu, he was ready not to withhold his one and only son in order to do the will of God. Velo dibarti, Yirmiyahu goes on to say, in the name of God, I never said it. I never said to Yiftach that he should sacrifice his daughter. Velo alta alibi, and it never occurred to me, Zemesha Melech Moav, that refers to Mesha, the king of Moav. Shekosumfo, it says about him, Bishor Shenofal Biyad Melech Yisrael, when he saw that he was falling into the hands of the king of Israel, Vayikach et bno habekor, Asher Yimloch Tachtav, Vayalehu Olah. This pasuk over here. God says, me? I never, ever, never, ever occurred to me that man should ever do anything of the sort. Now, I remember, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Avraham, it was a command. What Yiftach said was the dibur of his own mouth. Lo alta alibi is, I think, related to the pasuk by Yikach et b'no ha-bechor ha-shin lo takta vaya'alehu. Now, each one of these three never occurred to me. This pasuk in Yirmiyahu, by the way, appears, I think I said two, it appears three times in Yirmiyahu. Same words. Question is, and when you were a little bit concerned who took who, because there is another pshat, the fact is, the Vayikach, difficult to know who the Vayikach is referring to. So let me tell you the Abarbanel's pshat, and you'll see how the Abarbanel's pshat is going to fit into the context of everything that's taking place over here. The king of Moab tried to break through in order to get the king of Edom, but he couldn't. But you know what he did succeed? He captured the son of the king of Edom. And he brought the son of the king of Edom. Another pshat. This is not the Gemara, this is the Abarbanel. He took the son of the king of Edom and slaughtered him on the wall. Do you know what it accomplished? It destroyed the coalition. Edom blamed Yehuda and Yisrael. You didn't protect me enough. You didn't come to my aid. It's because I went out to war against you that I lost my... That's the Abarbanel's shot. Which means the following. This horrible act that took place, be it the king of Moab taking his own son, or the king of Moab taking the son of the king of Edom, there could have been one of three possible intents and purposes, and most probably all three of them. One was military, the other was psychological, and the third was religious. Military, do you know what he wanted to do? He saw that he's losing the battle. His men were in despair. He wanted to perform an act that would shock them into action. If they see the king of Moab taking his son and bringing him as a sacrifice, it sort of infused a whole new life into them. This is what our king is ready to do in order to win the war. We're going to go and fight. And they succeeded. Israel had to withdraw from the field of battle. incidentally, and maybe it's not so incidental, when Yehoshaphat and Achav went out to war at the end of Malachim Aleph, and then it was Michahu ben Yimla who was the Navi there, that battle also ended in disaster. Achav was killed in battle. This battle also, maybe not disaster, but the miracle of a complete and total victory over Moab simply doesn't happen. So first there's the psychological aspect. The king has done something shocking in order to send adrenaline through his troops. The second, of course, is the idea, the Abarbanel, the psychological one. He's going to cause a rift in the coalition arrayed against him by taking the son of the king of Edom and bringing him as a sacrifice. And then, of course, the Chachamim. And here I'll learn another medrash, a medrash Tanchuma. Ma'asa, when the king of Moab saw that the battle was lost, what did he do? Kines et kol istrologin shalo. He gathered all of his astrologers. Va'amalahen, and he told them, he said to his astrologers, Lo amartem, didn't you tell me? It seems his astrologers had told him, king, whatever you do, you're going to win the war against all of your enemies. Lo amartem, didn't you tell me, Shani osem milchama im kol ha'umot, I can wage war with all of the nations, v'notzeach, and I'm going to win, but I'm not winning. I mean, here he calls all of his advisors together. V'ilu ha'yehudim notzchimoti, the Jews are the ones who are winning this battle. Amulo, so they said to him, you know why they're winning? Bizchuz zaking echot shahoyalahem. It's in the merit of one old man that they had. King wanted to know who was this old man. Amalahem, he said to them, who's this old man? Amrullah, they said to him, Avram. They had an old man called Avram. Amalahem, Umar also, what did this Avram do? Amrullah, they said to him, Nolad lo ben echad, kishiyahoya ben mea, a son was born to him after he was 100 years old. And vihikrivo, and he brought him as a sacrifice. Amalahem, so he said to them, Hikrivo mamish, he really brought him as a sacrifice? Amalahem, no, they said, no, he didn't really do it. Amar, so the king of Moab says, if they are victorious because of an old man who nearly sacrificed but didn't sacrifice, can you imagine what's going to happen if I will indeed do him one step better, that old man, and I will indeed sacrifice my son? So that's exactly what he did. Ilu hikrivo, if I'm going to sacrifice him, I'm certainly going to succeed.
You're amazing.
The next words that were going to come out of my mouth were, and why the Ketzef on Israel? You know what it means? It means that I'm a great teacher, and you're an even better student. I brought you exactly to the point that I wanted. So what's the Ketzef? You know what the ketzef is? What? What?
They didn't get the miracle
that they wanted. Even though they sacrificed them. Oh, no, but why is the ketzef Gadol al Yisrael, she's asking. Why is he ketzef Gadol al Yisrael? Huh? No. From Hashem. Take a look at the extent to which this idolater is able to go, the Mesiras Nefesh of this idolater. It's like the famous word, it's most probably a Hasidic word, when Yaakov comes back from the house of Lavan, he sends a message to Esav, Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan, and I carried until now. Says Rashi, the famous Rashi, Im Lavan Garti, I lived with Lavan, the Taryag Mitzvot Shamarti, and I kept the 613 Mitzvot, V'lo Lamadati Mi Ma'asav Haraim, and I didn't learn from his evil ways. The real meaning of the Rashi is, I wasn't influenced by the evil ways of Lavan. But Darshanim, Chassidim say that Yaakov was complaining about himself, I kept 613 mitzvahs, but I didn't learn from his evil to do my mitzvahs with the same enthusiasm and with the same mesiras nefesh that he does his chishvos. sometimes the Rasha, very often, the Rasha is going to commit the crime with such enthusiasm, Mesiras Nefesh, thoroughness. And we don't have, sometimes for the fulfillment of mitzvahs, we don't have the same kind of Mesiras Nefesh. The Ketzav Gadol al Yisrael was, oh God, I'm the God of the Jewish people. Do you serve me in any way like this Meshach, king of Moab? Look what he's ready to do. Look what he's ready to do. He certainly did.
And
that's exactly what it says. Vayisu me'olam, vayeshvu la'aretz. Yisrael turned around and they returned to Eretz Yisrael, right? Absolutely, he succeeded. Wait a minute. Yeah, go ahead.
The passage you brought from Yirmiyahu was supposed to be
on all that the pasuk was saying. No. The pasuk is saying, I never wanted it. God says, don't blame me. I always rejected human sacrifice. I didn't want him to kill his son. You know what he did? It was an act of murder.
But what happened with his attitude toward Amish?
Yes, so that's already a fallout, a byproduct of it all. The man is a murderer, and he's ready to murder for his beliefs. Are you ready to do a little more study of Torah, a little bit more mitzvahs, with a little bit more enthusiasm? That's all that's happened. Nobody is saying that what he did was right. I mean, God wants to say, don't kid yourself. It was wrong. It was criminal. It was tragic.
But it brought out the Ketzer.
Why did he allow Moab to be victorious? Because Israel was unworthy of being victorious. That's why. It's not because Moab is better than Israel. It's because Israel is not good enough. They were unworthy. No, we're not talking about, we're talking about Yehoram, the son of Ahav, whom the Pasuk had said earlier that he wasn't a great tzaddik. He wasn't as bad as his father. And because he wasn't as bad as his father, by the way, and remember we pointed that out in last week's shir, Vayaasecha ra b'ene Hashem, he was not as bad as his father. That's why they're saved. Otherwise the three armies would have died from thirst in the desert. And that they're able to leave the field of battle relatively unscathed. But they were just unworthy of a miracle of great proportions. They were just unworthy of it. But isn't it fascinating? The son who is not a Rasha like the father, and the father, Achav, did succeed. He was one of the great conquerors of Jewish history. You know what I think sometimes? Go ask Kashis on the Rabbeinu Shlomo. Do we know the Rabbeinu Shlomo's Cheshbonos? Do we know what God has in mind? Yeah. Oh, they fled. They fled from the field of battle. Didn't it say earlier that they fled? The question is, would Israel be able to occupy Moab? That they couldn't do. If Moab flees in battle, that's already, in one sense, that's the victory, but it's not a total victory. They cannot... Isn't this nice? What's it I'm going to say? They are not going to reap the fruits of battle. The chol eitz tov tapilu. The fruit of battle you will not have. You will be victorious, but you're not going to benefit from it. Yes, I got three questions.
How many times in the last number of years when I've lived here for 3 wars, did we win the war and stop winning?
I am afraid to think about that. You can win the war but lose the battle, or you can win the battle and lose the war. That's exactly what happens over here. They won the battle but they lost the war. And they were not promised that they were going to win the war. Yes?
How do you write to the Abarba now when you get to date with the Gemara?
That's fine. Riva, zot hi she'ela kol kach tova. It's happened a few times. Yeah, absolutely. Very good. That's really a good question. That's really a good question. And if I'm going to answer that off the cuff, I will not succeed in really satisfying you, because what is required in order to know the answer to that question is that there are different levels on which to understand the pasuk. There's pshat. In other words, how do we take pshat, remez, sod, drush, the various levels on which a pasuk is to be understood? And there are times when they are in absolute conflict with one another. How do these various truths exist on at one and the same time? Let's say I will look for an opportunity to what it really is the idea of elu ve'elu divrei elokim chaim. These and those are the words of a living God. But your question is more serious. Your question is more serious because the Abravanel is simply not paying attention to what our rabbi said. He is disagreeing with them. Now, if he would disagree with them in a halacha, he's finished. But he does have a degree of license to disagree in terms of reading a pasuk. That's what I have to explain.
The question of interpretation.
To what extent do I have the right to say Chazal said such and such pshat, and I'm going to say another pshat? I mean, it can be a little dangerous. There have to be certain parameters, but I'm not going to talk about it now. Because I just wanted to say that I was going to run through the first few psukim of the next chapter, which we already learned. And the only reason I went on through it is because I want to present one idea that we did not express last time we learned it. Do you remember when we learned the next few psukim? When it was Parshas Vayera, and that was the Haftarah of Parshas Vayera, so I learned that. Now, okay.
When it says, Who went?
Oh, that has to be Yehuda and Yisrael. That has to be Yehuda and Yisrael, because they're the only ones who are going back someplace, and they're the only ones who can be going back La Aretz. La Aretz means Le Ha Aretz. There's only one place in Tanakh that is called to Ha Aretz. That's this place. That's why it has to be. And remember, the word that precedes it is Yisrael, which means the subject of the second part of the pasuk is Yisrael. By Yehi Ketzav Gadol Al Yisrael. By Yisu Me'olav, by Yoshuvu Lawrence. Gods. Except according to the Abarbanel. According to the Abarbanel, the Ketzef is Edom against the anger of Edom against the. That's right. By the way, maybe I should also explain Chazal. One thing I left out, shouldn't leave it out. There's a Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. To whom did Mesha sacrifice his son? To God or to his idol? And whichever way you look at it, you can understand the Ketz of God like Yisrael. If he's ready to sacrifice his son to Hashem Elokei Yisrael, what a Ketz. And even if he does it, Lavei Dezara, take a look at the way he worships. We should be as frum as him. Not so frum. Nearly. Let's go. I just want to, you know, we got to get into chapter Dalet. But we learned these psukim. I just want to express one more idea, if I can. V'isha achas min yishei b'nei anevim tzarko al Elisha. A woman, one of the women who was a wife of the sons of the prophets, tzarko al Elisha, she cried out to Elisha Lema, saying, Avdocha ishi meis, my husband, your servant, is dead, va'ato yodata, and you know, ki avdecha ha'yo yodeyat Hashem, that your servant feared God, v'hanoshebo, the creditor has come, l'kachat et shnei yoladai lo la'avadim, the creditor has come to take my two children unto him as slaves. By the way, whenever I say by the way, you should have the zeklau, when I say by the way, that means that this is something that I just thought of now. And if it's something that I just thought of now, you have one of two options. One option is that it's not so great, you know? It's not so great. Okay, you know? The other option, of course, is to get on my good side and say, oh, that's good. When we learn this, who was the husband that died? Ovadiah. Ovadiah is the one who is known as Yireh, the God-fearing one. Who is the creditor that wants to come and take the two children away? Yehoram, the king of Israel. Could this story be coming right after the unfinished battle in order to tell us, do you know why Yehoram ben Ahav, you know why he did not emerge victorious in that battle? Because take a look. Here, for religious reasons, make sure the king of Moab is ready to sacrifice his son. And this fellow is coming to take away the children of an almana. Yesayim, he's going to take away. And you know why? You know why he wants to take away the children? Not for the money that he lent her the money. It's for the interest on the overdraft. She wasn't able to pay. He lent her money on interest. You understand? And she can't pay. Oh, didn't lend her money, I'm sorry. The one who borrowed the money from him was Ovadiah. Why did Ovadiah borrow the money? So that he should be able to support the 100 prophets. Because Ahab and Izebel destroyed all of the prophets of Israel, and he took 100 prophets, and he... I was going to say he didn't profit. That's bad. What he did was he provided for them and sustained them from his own money. When he ran out of money, he used all of his own personal wealth. When he ran out of money, he borrowed money from the king's son. And the king's son lent him money on interest. Do you understand? And I always have this feeling that Yehoram ben Ahav is undermining his father and his mother. His father and his mother are the ones that want to destroy all of the prophets. Meanwhile, he is the one who's providing the money so that Ovadiah should be able to sustain them.
Classic rebellion.
Yes, classic. Yeah, the child rebellion. Yes, teenager. Rebellious teenager. I'll show my father and my mother. Vayomer Eleho Elisha. Elisha said to him, Ma Eselach, what can I do for you? should we welcome the Nathansons from West Hempstead who walked in here at the tail end, members of my former congregation that I look back with such fondness and love. On the congregation and the members. No. All right, let's just... What's Elisha going to do? Elisha says to her, what can I do for you? Hakidili. Tell me, what do you have in the house? So she said, all she had is a little bit of oil. Asuch. Most of us say that asuch is a keli, a vessel, keli of oil. The Navi is only going to be able to bring about the miracle, going to be able to bring about the miracle only because there's a little bit of oil. And that little bit of oil is going to multiply and multiply. That's what's going to happen with that oil. Like the Nes Chanukah. Okay, the oil is going to multiply. The Navi can never create something out of nothing. Only God, creatio ex nihilo. Only God creates something out of nothing. The Navi can't do that. The prophet is going to have a little bit of oil, and that oil is going to then multiply. We learned this story, and he tells her, get all sorts of vessels and pots and pans. She gets it from her neighbor, she brings it into the house, she closes the door behind her, she starts pouring from that little oil, and it just pours and it pours and it pours until it fills up all of the jars. Let me ask you, what would have happened if this almana would have come to one of us, and said, listen, you know, I'm in dire straits. I owe a lot of money. What would we do? We'd give her a few shekel. For that matter, we would most probably get together a group of people and we would start a campaign to make sure that we're going to find the money to provide for this There's no honor. Listen. Elisha could have gotten all of the prophets who had benefited from Obadiah. Chevra, we're going to go out on a major campaign. Repay the debts. We owe the debt. That's number one. Why doesn't he simply, you know, you'll get it in your mailbox, an envelope, Zarkas, Halmona, Vayisimim, you understand, and you have it signed by Yechves, Rav Shlomo Zalman, and Rav Shach, and you know, why not go out, why not raise money for it? What's Elisha's problem? Why does it have to be a miracle? And if it has to be a miracle, why does the miracle have to start with a little bit of oil? What do you want to say?
That he wanted her to be involved in solving her problem.
All right, so you can send her around on a speaking tour. Go ahead. Yes.
No, but this is Parnassa already for more than paying the debt.
All right, that's true. But, you know, you can even do that. We can put together a fund for the education of the children and, you know, some trust fund. I'm sure a good accountant could find a way to do it. I mean, we don't... I mean, I have all sorts of almanis and yosinim that come to me for help. What do you think I do? I ask them if they have a little bit of oil in their house. What do I do? We go out and we... Why is the miracle necessary here? Who said that? Why is the miracle necessary?
It wasn't dignified for Elijah's widow to have to get to the doctor. This is much more dignified.
All right, maybe it's more dignified. Okay. But there's another question. Do you know what the real question over here is? The age-old question, Tzadik v'chalo, the righteous suffer. Why should Ovadia's almana and Yisomim suffer? Rebbeinu Shel Olam, lama tacharish, Habakkuk says, why do you remain silent when you see the Rasha who's consuming the Tzadik? The age-old question. Do you know what Elisha wants to do? Elisha feels that what's necessary here is a miracle. And I'll tell you why a miracle is necessary. The miracle is necessary because it's going to blunt the sharpness of the agonizing question. I'll give you an example and then you'll understand exactly what's happening here. And I humbly believe that what I'm saying is true. After the Shoah, the question was, where was God? Where was God? How did he permit this to happen? How does he permit the almana of Ovadia and her two children to be suffering? So how do you do it? How do you help? How do you permit it to happen? 3 years later comes the establishment of the State of Israel. Miracle! Unprecedented in all of history. People after 2,000 years return to their home and establish a state. The establishment of the state is not the answer to the question, but does it dull the sharpness of the question? If you ask, where was God at Auschwitz, can I not say, but I know that he's alive and well in Eretz Israel? You know what Elisha has to do? Elisha has to dull the sharpness of the question, how can does the Rebbe Shem permit the almana of Ovadia and her two children to suffer so terribly? For what? For what? Because he supported the Nevi'im. He lost his life supporting the Nevi'im. So then Elisha brings the miracle. The miracle is never the answer. But what the miracle is, don't be so hasty to say that there is no God, or God is not concerned, or God doesn't hear the cries. He hears the cries. So you don't understand the suffering that befalls the righteous? So you don't understand. Okay. We're not privy to know everything that that God does in this world. We're not. That's all. Not everything is open before us. Not everything is for our knowledge. Yavo Yom, the day will come. They will come and we'll. Huh? It's Eo's question. So what I'm saying over here is, sure, Elisha could have made a campaign. Elisha could have sent out letters. He could have sent out the Nevi'im with pushkas. They could have found other means. This is the only means of taking care of an almana and her two children. But Elisha understands the painful question that's being asked by everybody who sees this. What Elisha has to do now is make certain that in some way he reveals the dignity of God in this world. Yes, there is a God. It was not bad. So I'm going to turn off my tape recorder.